Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Sometimes the biggest changes in our lives aren't the dramatic ones. They're the quieter shifts in how we see ourselves, what we value, what we're willing to let go of, and what we still want from the years ahead. My guest today, Chip Scholes, has had plenty of opportunity to think about those things. He's navigated career success and a later life layoff, recovered from a stroke, raised three daughters, and spent more than four decades married to the same woman, and somewhere along the way discovered that being useful matters more to him than being important. Chip is an author, storyteller, executive coach, and craftsman who turns wood on a lathe. And as you'll hear, even that has taught him something about people, relationships, and change. We talk about identity, marriage, resilience, letting go, legacy, curiosity, and the small decisions that quietly shape a life. And Chip introduced me to a philosophy so simple, I may have to steal it. Semper Gumby, always flexible. But as Chip explains, even flexibility needs guardrails. Listen now to my conversation with Chip Scholes. My guest today has spent much of his life thinking about transitions, not just the obvious ones, but the quieter shifts that happen when our roles change, our plans are interrupted, or life asks us to become someone new. After a long career working with leaders and organizations, Chip experienced a major transition of his own when a later life layoff forced him to rethink who he was apart from his work. Along the way, he built a coaching practice, learned to turn wood on a lathe, raised three daughters, enjoys more than four decades of marriage, and began writing about the small moments that shape a life. His latest book, Every Dog Has Its Day, reflects on family, craftsmanship, love, identity, and the lessons that often arrive quietly rather than all at once. Chip Scholes, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Agnes, so nice to be here. I am so glad to be talking to you.
Well, and I'm so glad you reached out. Some men's stories don't always relate, but you're in a fairly unique position being surrounded by women, and we're going to go there.
Well, you probably see right over my shoulder, it says Girl Dad, and it
Oh, I
says
can't read it from here, but oh, there
let
we
me
go. There we go. Officially outnumbered. There you go. Yeah, you were outnumbered, I think with the first one.
Yeah, I have three daughters and a wife, and most of the dogs are female. So yes, I spent my life around that.
Okay, and that's one of the places we're going to go today. Now, first of all, you wrote that a layoff later in life became an unexpected reset. Looking back now, what did that experience teach you about the difference between who we are and what we do?
So you have to go a little bit before that, and I spent about 10 years as a lobbyist in Los Angeles, and so it was pretty heady stuff. I was hobnobbing with the rich and famous and the elected officials, and I think LA is a little bit different now than it was 30 years ago, but I was one of those community people that everybody knew and was at all the dinners and all the golf tournaments and all that kind of stuff. And it is really heady stuff. And in fact, I tell a story about one dinner we were at, my wife and I were at, and somebody came up to her and said, "Oh my God, Chip is so wonderful. I can't even believe you're married to him." And she says, "Yeah, you don't have to live with him." So, the hobnobbing and being hoity-toity didn't really work that well with my family. And so I got laid off in May of 98. It was I think it we had gone through five bosses in the last 3 years, and so I kind of knew it was going to happen. It was about time to happen, and it was energizing. It wasn't deflating. It was energizing because I got to do what I wanted to do, Now, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I didn't want to do what I was doing. So, it was a chance to start over.
I don't know whether to be surprised or impressed that you sort of found it exhilarating to be in that position. I have also been in that position, and I do identify with it, but I wasn't hobnobbing with the rich and famous. Now, many of our listeners are they're semi-retired, retired, widowed, divorced, caregiving something or out there. For most people, it's really hard to let go of identities that served us well for probably decades.
Well, that's really interesting you say that because it was really difficult. I had a friend, a colleague, I guess it was a friend, who worked for the phone company, and he was in a similar position as I was. He didn't have the grounding. He didn't have the family. He was going through a divorce, and his company zigged. And change course, and the things that they valued about him changed, just like mine did, and he didn't have anything to fall back on, and it was really tough for him. He decided to try out music, and he was later in life as well. That didn't work out so well, and the last I heard, he was in assisted living, and just. Not doing that well. Well, I had that family to fall back on, and I had more that to fall back on. And that's where the title of my book came. Every dog has his day. So everybody has their 15 minutes of fame, and some people's 15 minutes last 15 years, but everybody has that, and you know that it's going to be over someday, and so. In a way, so we moved from Los Angeles to North Carolina. It's all the way across country, and that's a whole nother story. We moved in a 19-foot travel trailer with five cats, two dogs, and three humans. We moved someplace that I didn't know anybody. I had a Rolodex, and of course, a Rolodex is what we used to call those things, right?
I know what
Yes.
that
Yes. I figured you would. I had a Rolodex to choke a horse in Los Angeles, and here I didn't know anybody. And that's frightening, but it's also exhilarating again because you get to reinvent yourself. You get to basically not have to tell everybody you're not that guy anymore. You can walk in and say, I'm this guy, and not have to change anything. So that was the exciting part. The tough part was building a business and building a life here. And the first 5 years were really tough, and it's just it took some time.
I want to back up the bus a minute, though, because you hear the thing about work-life balance. I once heard a very high-level executive explain that to him, work-life balance wasn't a matter of time, like 2 hours here, 2 hours there, that sort of thing, or 8 hours, 8 hours, whatever. It was a matter of when he was in the office, his brain, his everything, his focus was about the job. And when he was home, it was 100% about the family. Now, you said that it was your family that support that helped you get through that, whereas your friend slash acquaintance didn't have that, and he didn't do as well as you. You must, I won't even ask, I'm going to say you must have had that work-life balance where when you were home, it was all about the family. To have them support you after such a major life event.
Yeah, I
Blow your own horn.
know I well no I you know and I'm not a fan of the work-life balance discussion because I think it's more like harmony. It's how we play to those different things that there are different seasons for everything. There are times when your family takes over. There are times when your work takes over. There are times when your education takes over. It really is it's a fluid situation, and I think the whole concept of balance is kind of crazy anyway. I mean, nobody works 8 hours a day and lives 8 hours a day. That's,
And that's
you
why I
know.
wanted to clarify that it wasn't like a time thing. It was more of an attention thing.
I think it was a slow motion realization that some things were more important. And look, my kids lost a lot of bets about whether my wife and I'd stay together. And we've been together 42 years now. And you know, hey, it's great. But we had our moments. We really did. And I'm sure every marriage does.
I'd be more concerned about the ones that don't. Now, you talk about life being shaped by small decisions more than the big ones. Were there, or could you tell us about one or two small decisions that ended up changing a lot, if not everything?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of those, you know, because everything's a small decision. And we're always looking for the big shifts. We're always looking for the big payoff. You know, we're always looking to win the lotto. And you know, nobody gets rich by, well, I there are a few people that get rich by winning the lotto, but not that many. You know, and so it's the small things that you do. When I talk about small decisions and you know a more difficult one is I had a stroke in 2012, and coming back from that, it was a small decision every day to get up and start walking. I lost 110 pounds in the year afterwards. I walked 3,500 miles in the 2 years afterwards. And it was a small decision to get my butt out of bed and go out and do the walking. It was the way that I made decisions about what I was going to put in my mouth. And you know, everything we do is a small decision. You know, because here's the other thing is everything we do, we fail at. You know, we're not perfect, and I don't think anybody is perfect, and I don't think anybody can be perfect. We fail a lot, and you know, maybe sometimes the failure is just not loading the dishwasher right, which is one of those things that you know, if you've been married for any amount of time or live with somebody else, you know what I'm talking about. You know. It's how do you come back from that? It's those small decisions. It's the small decision to get up every day. You know, I think courage is not the big thing, running into battle or you know, stopping a bullet or that kind of thing. I think courage is waking up every day and deciding to do what's right for you, what's right for your family, what's right for whoever you're working for, and that's real courage. Do you know, does that make sense at all?
It does. I want to push back a little bit on the failure thing. A whole bunch of years ago, I remember writing an article about is it failure or is it not failure? And I think where it came from was I made one of those big moves. I moved to another city, sold up, quit my job, everything to take care of my mother. I opened a B&B because that was my way of being able to stay home and take care of my mother. Her behaviors got so random and so off the wall that it was just too stressful for me to have guests. It was a fairly high-end B&B. And I remember writing that I didn't fail at the B&B. I just didn't succeed. And for me, there's a difference. When you don't succeed is not always failure. Sometimes not succeeding is a decision. Whether it's one of those small ones or one of the big ones.
That's an interesting take. You know, I don't think you're a failure when you fail. You know, failure is a verb, not a noun. You know, I just think, you know, look, there's a great book that I read. It was written in 2011. It's written by Catherine Schultz, and it's called Being Wrong. I realize I'm wrong most of the time. And I think that goes to failure is just look, you know, we're going to fail at the little stuff, and maybe we're going to fail at the big stuff too, but it's the small decisions every day to to work against that. Does that make any sense
It does. I'm not sure you're going to change my mind, but it does
at
make it does
all?
make
Well,
sense.
that's okay. I'm not trying to sell you on anything.
We'll do that later. Oh, dear. Okay, let's talk about this marriage. 42 years. What do you understand? You said you've had your ups and downs. What do you understand about partnership today that you couldn't possibly have understood when you first got married?
There was a great movie years ago called Family Man, and it was Nicolas Cage and Taye Leone, and he had a glimpse. I don't know if you ever saw that movie, but one of the statements that Taye Leone made was, "I choose us." I don't think I knew what that really meant. We were there for a lot of the transitions. We were there for my dad died, my mom died, and fairly early. My dad was 51, my mom was 56 when they passed. So I was 30 when my mom died. So we were there for each other for some of the transitions, but I don't think I really understood what that meant until later in life. And it was really the fullness of the fullness of the relationship as we worked it out. It's going through some of those big transitions. It's going through some of the personal crises, kids who did stupid things or thought they were doing smart things and it didn't work out, or health crisis or whatever. And I think that's one of the things that I understand now is what choosing us means. I think that's been the biggest thing.
I'm glad you said that last part because I was actually just going to go down this little path of, you're looking at it from a man's point of view. I'm looking at things from a woman's point of view. And that's going to be part of our discussion today. We talked about that before. And I guess where I was wondering is, I don't know if your in-laws, your wife's parents are still here with us or not, but it sounds like your wife and your family saw you through those moments. And I'm sure to a certain extent it was hard. I'm trying to decide whether to put an ER on the end of that or not, whether it was harder for you because we don't expect to lose our parents when we're 30. Whereas by the time we're 60, it's, yeah, sooner or later that's going to happen. And I guess I was just wondering that I want to make sure that you were as
Well,
supportive for your wife as she was.
my wife lost her dad when she was 18. He was 48. Her mother died 12 days shy of 98. She died in my easy chair in my wife's arms.
Oh, okay. Isn't that lovely? Yeah.
She lived with us for the last probably 3 or 4 years of her life. She lived with us probably between 4 and 6 months a year for the last 30 years of our life. In fact, probably closer to 40 years. She came and stayed with us. My mother-in-law was an incredible person. She was the one. So you can see behind me all the wood objects. I work on the lathe, and these are all things that I've made. And not the golf balls, of course, but all the wooden objects. And she's the one who always wanted me to be useful, to have a craft. She was an incredible, incredibly crafty woman. God, she painted theorem painting. I don't know if you've ever heard of theorem painting, but it's on like a creamy velvet that you paint oils on, use stencils and that. She taught it for many years. She did these metal trays that were incredible with gold leaf and that kind of thing. I mean, she was a pretty incredible woman. And when she passed, the day after Christmas in 2017. It was tough. It was really tough. And by that time we knew what choosing us was all about.
Forgive me, I'm not making light of the passing of your mother-in-law. However, I did a little time stamp there because I'm going to cut out that piece about her living with you for 6 months, because I have two sons-in-law and I figure up the road I can just go back and forth, 6 months here, 6 months there. So you're going to be a role model for my sons-in-law.
I think that's great. We loved it. We really did. And God, I think it was probably about the time that she turned early 60s until she died in 98.
That's great. Yeah. And I love those relationships. I had a career in elder care, and I wish more people would do that. So, okay, you raised three daughters. Must have given you a unique perspective, shall we say. What have the women in your life taught you about resilience?
Goodness.
We have all day.
Yeah, what has a woman about have taught me about resilience? God, it's life, isn't it? Resilience is life. Resilience is bouncing back. I think one of the biggest things that the kids have taught me, and my wife has taught me this quite a bit, is that we don't give up on each other. My youngest daughter did some pretty dumb things,
We all have one.
yeah, we do, and sometimes more than one, but that you don't give up. And see, the cool thing is my youngest daughter loves to turn wood. I'm the president of the North Carolina Woodturners Association. She's a member of the club. I taught a class last Saturday, and she and another woman that works with us, she assisted in the class. It's if I'd given up on her and I'd thrown her out when she was 20, she wouldn't be where she is today.
Yeah, I guess one thing I always think about, you don't know what you don't know. And yeah, working hand in hand with you never give up or never give up on them. Yeah, you could never have seen when you were in the weeds that, these years later, she'd be such a good, integral part of your life.
I know, I know. Yeah, it's so. I just finished writing a book that's coming out in October called Handoffs, and it's about a family business. And I don't think I could have written the family dynamics as well if I hadn't been through a lot of the family dynamics.
Okay. Is it a novel or is it sort of a guidebook?
It's a fable, so it's
Okay.
I use the framework that I used in one of my other books as the framework of that book, but it's the gripping family drama that we all go through, and it talks about identity, and it talks about giving up identity and succession and walking away from something you've built and something that you loved.
Just I did see the word succession on your bio, and I was thinking futuristically of another episode with you. If your daughters were sitting with you right now, what would they say is the life lesson that you repeat most often?
Yeah, I think that'd be interesting, and we had a great Father's Day. They were all over, and it was such a joy to be around them. We went to lunch, and then came back here and had dessert and presents. And God, I don't know. I would ask them. I'd really like to ask them what that answer is. It could be about resilience. It could be, one of my favorite saying is a Semper Gumby. So I don't know if you've ever heard that, but Semper Gumby is Semper is always, right? It's
Oh,
Latin
okay.
for always. And Gumby, you know who Gumby is?
Well, that's where my brain went first, is I know who Gumby is, but then I'm thinking I also took Latin and I missed. Oh, okay. Ooh, he's even fur-lined. Whoa.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So Semper Gumby is always
Always Gumby.
flexible.
Okay.
Yeah, because Gumby was really flexible. So Semper Gumby is always flexible. And I that's been my mantra for a long time is, look, when you start off and you're walking down the street and you think something's going to happen, something else is going to happen. Something else might happen. And that's the way it is. It's just, that's held me in good stead for many years. I've run a number of events over the years, golf tournaments, dinners, that kind of stuff. Semper Gumby. If things don't turn out exactly the way you want them, let's change it.
As a woman of a certain age, may I give you one small piece of advice?
Sure.
Go get two more Gumbies, because I think that, it's one of those wordless things that you can pass one on to each of your daughters, and it'll just sit on a shelf. And but every time they spot it, and the grandchildren will ask, and the great grands will ask, and Semper Gumby, I love that.
Yep. That's been my mantra for a long, long time.
Well, you need two more, and then each daughter has one. Okay.
Okay, good.
Okay, now you wrote that the women you admire most are becoming more intentional. Boy, I have mouth problems today. I apologize. You wrote that the women you admire most are becoming intentional about what actually matters. What are you observing?
I think of colleagues, I think of the women that are around me. Again, I go back to Semper Gumby, and you're always flexible, but you're doing it with guardrails. What are the things that matter to you most? And those create the guardrails for you. And I think that's really important.
I'm just going to repeat it back to you that flexibility is so important, but you have to be true to yourself as well, or
Yeah,
true to.
I don't know how it is up in Canada, but down here, if you go five over the speed limit, you usually don't get popped by the police. So it's guardrails. It's, I know I have to go 70. I can go 70 on the freeway. I might be able to push 75. I probably will get screamed at if I go 65, but those are the guardrails. But I know that 70 is the speed that I'm okay at.
Hey, this is an insight into me, and my first thought was they got to catch me. Oh, dear. Sorry.
I don't know. Are the Mounties that quick?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Your work often returns to the idea of letting go. Why is letting go so much harder than starting over?
Oh, letting go is the preface for starting over. I think of all the people that have built businesses, and perhaps even if they have businesses that they inherited. I'm thinking of a number of people in their late 60s and early 70s and even into their 80s that are running businesses that their fathers or their grandfathers started. And it is such an identity. They've grown up in the business. Most of them worked in the business when they were teenagers, and maybe they went to college, maybe they didn't, but they've worked in the business now 50, 60 years. And that is such an identity that you're so wound up in that. You're so wound up in being the biggest person in Fargo, South Dakota, or Buffalo, New York, or wherever. And that all the trappings of that, boy, they're really heavy. And I guess if you never have to change that, I guess that's okay. But what do you do when you want to step back? Do you want to hold on to the business with an iron grip? Or do you want to give it to the next generation? And how can you do that in the best possible way? How can you all of a sudden go from being the most important person in the room to being the least important person in the room. That's letting go. Letting go of things that you believe that don't work anymore. You know, that you all of a sudden find are true. I mean, it's not what hurt you that, or it's not what you know that hurt you. It's what you know that isn't so that hurt you.
Okay. My thoughts went to somebody I know, knew, that basically said, I am terminating this part of my life now because nobody will be able to do as good of a job as I have done. So that's sort of that murky place between succession and letting go and all the rest of it.
Well, there's a word for that. And the word is hubris.
Okay.
Yeah, and hubris is a dangerous thing. You know,
Explain it, please. I've heard the word, but.
if you believe, first of all, if you believe you're the smartest person in the room, if you believe that nobody can could have done that like you've done it, you know, maybe I could get away with it if I'm Tiger Woods. But I'm not. And, you know, I think I've got some unique ways of coaching, of explaining things, of talking, of being. But, you know, it's like during COVID, I had the experience, or I had the this is going to be really grim, but you know, there are 3.4 million people who die in America every year.
Whoa, that's yeah.
Doesn't that just kind of weird you out? 3.4 million people.
Yeah,
So
if you
it's,
look at it as a percentage, it's like just a number.
yeah. But wow, 3.4 million families are having to deal with that. And doesn't that humble you? Doesn't that say that you're it's not a unique experience? Even though it feels like a unique experience when a parent dies, or when a child dies, or whatever. So I know that was really grim, but what I'm trying to say is that, you know, you're unique like everybody else.
Right. There we go. Okay. Yeah, it was interesting that I can't imagine for me to pass a business or something on to whether it's the next generation or someone else, it just means an influx of new ideas. And possibly getting rid of some of the things that I was sitting on for far too long. Yeah. Is it ego? Is hubris
Of course,
ego?
of course it is. That's a
Okay.
part of it.
Yeah.
It's just believing, it's believing your own BS. It's believing your own press, you know? And that's one thing I learned a long time ago, in the lobbying business, that if you start believing your own press, you're in real trouble.
I call it having an overinflated view of my own self-importance.
That is definitely and very well said.
Was there a point in your life, it sounds like there could well have been, when you realized that success wasn't what you thought it was, what you once thought it was?
Well, for me, it was borrowed success. And what I mean by that is, I worked for a company. I didn't work for myself. I didn't create it. I didn't build it. I didn't do anything. But because of the position I was in, I was able to, you know, do all the telethons and be at all the dinners and do all that kind of stuff and give all the speeches. You know, I back in the day, in LA, I was chairman of four different chambers of commerce. I was on the board of 26 different chambers of commerce. I ran somewhere north of 200 golf tournaments. I was, you know, I was on probably close to 100 nonprofit boards. Well, you get really well known. And the danger is believing your own BS. The danger is in that, is believing you're that good. And what I found out especially when I got laid off, and even before that, is that it was all borrowed. It wasn't something I did. Yes, I was the one who was going to all the dinners and all that kind of stuff, but you could have taken and replaced me with, one of several thousand people who could have done the same thing on somebody else's dime for another entity. Does that make sense?
It does. The analogy that comes to mind for me is like the brick wall, and you're one of the bricks. Are you a very important brick in the structure of that wall? Followed up, my thoughts followed up by, if you were to disappear, like aliens came down in the night and swooped you away, would you be like would all of those boards and golf tournaments and all that sort of stuff, would they trip and stumble, or would they just go, oh, tripped over the daisy in the sidewalk, let's get going with somebody else?
Well, the answer is they just go ahead and live on. There's a card that a postcard that my dad gave me years ago, and I'll tell a little bit of a story about that. But the postcard was called The Water Cure, and The Water Cure, it was he bought it at Atlantic City, and he gave it to me, and maybe I was getting cocky in my 10-year-old world, and The Water Cure basically said, anytime you're feeling really important, take a bucket of water out, stick your hand in, swish it around all you want, and then pull it out and look for the hole that's left, and that's how much you'll be missed. And I found that years later, probably, God, 20 years ago, I was going through a bunch of old papers, and I found the card, and just made me smile again, because I remember my 10-year-old self getting this card and wondering what the heck my dad was trying to tell me. And God, it just is incredibly grounding, because you can swish all around you want, but there's no hole that's left. And that's what you find out. I think, when you get to my age, certainly you've got a long way to go before you get there.
Your check is in the mail.
Okay, thank you. That's one thing you find out is that, look, if I leave a place, maybe they'll remember me, maybe they won't. Maybe your friends will call you, maybe they won't. And life goes on. Maybe they'll tell chip stories after I'm gone. Maybe they won't,
What I find interesting about that is if you were to list down all the things that you were very involved in, in terms of the boards and the golf tournaments and the, oh, who knows what, it would look very impressive on a piece of paper. And people would think you were a very important person. And that leads back to a question I asked you near the beginning. Is the person and letting go, and we see ourselves in these roles, and then to let go of it can be, I'm sure, for some people, a huge mental shift.
Again, the book title, Every Dog Has His Day. I mean, that was a saying that I've used over and over again, which means, let go, damn it. Every dog has his day. You've had your day, get over it. Get move on. And the other meaning of that is a great phrase. It's a Latin phrase. It was attributed to Marcus Aurelius. It's memento mori, which is remember your death. And so every dog has his day is okay, we get our 15 minutes of fame, move on, but also some people are going to die. And so how do we rationalize that? How do we understand that in terms of what we're doing now?
The thought that comes to mind, the question that comes to mind, if you were to write a book on legacy, like we're, I don't know, 40 minutes in, you've had so many amazing thoughts. and grounding thoughts. That if you ever write that book on legacy, please send me a copy.
Well, I'll send you a copy of Every Dog Has His Day because a lot of it it has to do with that. But legacy. Somebody's going to end up with these wooden bowls someday. My kids all have multiple wooden bowls and pepper mills and Christmas ornaments and all that kind of stuff that I've made. And maybe 100 years from now, maybe they'll still be rolling around somewhere, and somebody will remember that. But legacy is in the people that live on. It's not the history books. It's the it's how somebody thinks. It's how somebody acts. It's how somebody, maybe they do something different and they don't even really know why they're doing something different. They just are doing it. That's really legacy.
I'm really impressed at the fact, like so many things we've touched on here, you keep on looking ahead, and not looking back. Right now, today, if all the job titles, all that stuff disappeared, how would you introduce yourself to a stranger?
I actually wrote it in my profile. I'm just a man with a lathe, a pocket knife, and a few stories, and that's really what I've gotten to. Look, I've spent the last almost 30 years as an executive coach and a facilitator and all that kind of stuff. What that really means is that you get to be a pretty good storyteller, and you've got to have some stories to tell when you are a pretty good storyteller. So there are so many different passions that I have right now. I don't know if passion's a good story, a good way to say that. There's so many different interests, I guess, is what I say. I don't ever intend to retire. I don't want to take coaching calls in my hospital gown. That wouldn't be good. But I still want to be useful. And I that's really what it is it's being relevant and being useful. And relevance isn't knowing what your favorite TikTok is, because I don't really watch TikTok, but relevance is just being part of the conversation, just being able to have the conversation. What fascinates me right now is AI and all the ways you can use it. And that's just been fascinating to me, and watching that progression and seeing the industry and being involved in that. But how does that affect wood turning? Well, it doesn't. I mean, wood turning is an ancient art, right? I mean, it's been around for thousands and thousands of years, and
But
I
AI
guess.
can look at those thousands and thousands of years much more quickly than you and come up with the design that you hadn't even thought of yet.
That's true. That's true. Of course, it'll probably be a weird design and one that nobody will ever buy, but hey, who knows?
But you did
That's right. That's right.
it.
That's
Okay,
right.
you just use the word usefulness. You speak about usefulness rather than status. Go there, please.
Okay. So early in my career, I was a manager for the first time at 25 years old. The people who put me in that place should have been shot. I was no more equipped to be a manager at 25 years old than the man in the moon. I had horrible imposter syndrome. And throughout my life, I was really good at faking it. When I got into my own business and started coaching and started being on stage and all that kind of stuff, I was really good at faking it. I was really good at imposter syndrome. And it was all about being performative. I see people that are performing and not and not authentically performing, not authentically bringing their whole selves to the party. And usefulness is about authenticity. Usefulness is about not having to worry about performing. It's just it's fitting in and being useful wherever you can. I think about the classes that I teach in wood turning. Yeah, I'm not worried about how I'm performing. I'm worried about, is someone going to make something useful at the end of the session? And if they say nice things about me on the critique sheet, that's great. But did they get something out of it? And so, it's not how you get up and dance around and perform. It's how useful are you? How useful do people feel after they've had an interaction with you?
Our audience is my age, if not your age. Are those the kind of lessons that take these years to learn? Like, this sounds like wisdom, which we don't always have when we're younger, much
Yeah.
younger.
There's a great book called From Strength to Strength by Albert Brooks. Have you read that?
No, I've heard of it though, yeah.
Yeah. And it talks about the difference between fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence, and how as you age, you end up with more crystallized intelligence. And the big difference between fluid and crystallized intelligence is the going from the problem solving and the creativity to the being able to recall a number of facts. So I'll give you an example. Most artists, if you think about most songwriters, singer-songwriters, they have a window of creativity. It might be 10 years, it might be 20 years. But how many of those people, 30 years later are still singing the same songs, right? So in the early years, they were being creative. They were putting down a whole bunch of songs. And if you think about the Beatles, they have a songbook of almost 300 songs that they did in 10 years. And then they performed them. Now, Paul McCartney has been a pretty good songwriter through the years. So that's a little bit of a disproval of the theory, or maybe that's just a one-off. But it makes us good at teaching. It makes us good at wisdom. So, it's kind of like the difference between knowledge and wisdom. And what I'll say about that is, I'm in the conversations that talk about generations, and you even brought it up with the boomer woman is, that's a generational distinction. And they talk about Gen Z and millennials and Gen X and all that kind of stuff. And I still remember an article in the Wall Street Journal that was written several years ago that talked about how millennials, they were in their 20s at their time, the millennials aren't buying houses and weren't going to buy houses, and they were eschewing houses and because that wasn't their lifestyle. And I thought, wait until they have kids and families, and they'll start buying houses. And sure enough, they got into their late 20s and early 30s, and they started buying houses. It's kind of like the travel to knowledge too, and the travel to wisdom. So we can have all kinds of knowledge, and that's great, but I think it takes a lived experience to get wisdom. I think you're absolutely right. And Steve Jobs said something really interesting. And of course, he died in his 50s. But he said, we've spent a lifetime of amassing all this knowledge, and then it's gone. I think that's sad.
Yeah. You've spent a lifetime observing women. I've spent a lifetime observing men. I'm going to give you an opportunity here. And I don't mean that condescendingly, I'm sorry. When a man retires, loses a job, becomes a caregiver, faces health issues, simply gets older. What do you think that many women don't fully appreciate about what he's going through?
Maybe that's generational too. Because if you think about the traditional roles of men and women, I think of my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law, until her husband died, had never written a check, had never gone car shopping. She just, one day she looked out in the driveway and there's a new car for her. She never had to deal with all of that stuff. I think women today, and even our age, and I'll, rip the kimono off. I'm going to be 70 in November. Even at our age, women have found their place in the workplace. I think women run a lot more complex lives than men. I think that's shifting. And in fact, if you look at the data, there are a lot more men that are taking responsibilities in the home. It's not 50-50 yet, but it's probably about 40-60, 40% of men are doing as much housework. And I think that evens the gap.
I'm going to stick with our generation, though, and I am older than you.
Okay, I didn't know this was a contest.
Well, it is now, apparently. Insofar as, now the tides are evening, shall we say. I won't say they're turning, they're evening. But men of our generation often, I'm choosing my words here because I don't want a blanket statement, often have not shared their feelings. They've not talked about loss. It's been that stiff upper lip kind of thing. And women in my peers don't, we're sort of almost not, I won't say opposite, but quite different. How can we understand what you're going through with those major life transitions if you're not talking to us? I'm making it really personal now, and I apologize for that.
A lot of therapy, and I'm being a little bit
Are you
a
talking about
little
therapy for the man or therapy for the woman? Like, I want you to
bit
help us. I guess I'm asking for help, is what I'm
probably
asking
both.
for.
Yeah, probably both. I don't know. I would hate to talk for somebody else. I'm pretty good at showing emotion. So one of the things, and I'd said we've had our ups and downs. One of the things that we've spent a lot of time in is therapy over the years, and I think that makes us a whole lot more healthy when it comes to how we express ourselves. And I don't know. I would have a hard time. I would have a hard time speaking for a generation for sure.
I think as you struggled when I first asked that question, I thought, no, given what you've told us so far and the way you and your wife have communicated or learned to communicate, probably we're not as able to answer that as someone who's really done deep dives into men's behavior and stuff like that. But it was worth a question. It was worth asking.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
Okay, just before we wrap, when your grandchildren or future generations of your family talk about you someday, what do you hope that they say had nothing to do with your career and everything to do with who you were?
And unfortunately, my children don't have children, and so there won't be grandchildren around. But I just I would like to be known as a craftsman. I would like to, there's two things. I'd like to be known as a craftsman, and I'd like to be known as a kind person. That's what I want to be known for. I don't want to be, I don't care about all the other stuff. I just, just someone who was able to, in the books that I write and the pieces that I make and the things that I do and the work that I do coaching others. I want to be known as kind, and I want to be known as a craftsman.
Sometimes it's hard to say something without sounding like you're being, like, I don't know, condescending or something. But
Oh,
having spent an
sure. Go ahead and do.
no, I no, I was just going to say, after spending just an hour with you, it seems to me that you do embody both those things. So that's me after an hour, let alone somebody after a lifetime. So for what it's worth.
Well, Agnes, that is not condescension, but that is very kind of you to say.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like mid-age women to think about after listening to this conversation?
The one thing that impresses me about you is you seem to be healthy. You seem to have taken care of yourself. You seem to have outside interests and think deeply about things. And I would I would encourage that. The best part of it is maybe, some people say the best part is behind us. I think the best part is about to come. And I know so many people that have retired, and they've retired from life. You're running a podcast, my goodness. And you're probably talking to all kinds of crazy people and having conversations, and you're asking really good questions. That takes some intellectual curiosity. And that is really cool. So, I guess the thing that I would say is, first of all, don't give up on yourself. Second of all, don't lose your curiosity.
Well, thank you for all that, but you've also just summarized why I do this podcast is because for everybody out there that's listening to us, and maybe more especially the people who aren't listening to us, you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring,
That's it.
and it's it, it you could walk in front of the bus, or it could be some grand, amazing thing that just opens up in front of
That
you.
is.
So,
That is.
yeah.
Yeah, I think we get old when we stop being curious.
And laughing.
A lot of that too.
Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
I'm at scholesandassociates.com. I'm in the process of working on a new website, as a matter of fact, which will be at chipscholes.com. But my books are on Amazon and a number of different audio platforms, and you can get a hold of me at chip@scholesandassociates.com.
Okay. And you're on social, I believe.
I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Threads. I'm not on X. I'm not an X.
No.
I left X a long time ago and haven't got back.
No, I'm in the same boat as you there. Can I
Yes. Yes.
ask you a
This
personal
is
question? What? Go ahead.
you may. You may. Go ahead and ask me a personal question.
Okay. You spend time turning wood on a lathe. Was it, what is it about taking a rough piece of wood and it becoming something useful or just beautiful that keeps drawing you back?
You never know what you're going to get. I mean, it's kind of like life is a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get. Everything that I do starts with a log, and when you cut into a log, you don't know what the inside is going to look like, and all the different species, all the different grain patterns, all the different burls. In fact, that one that you can see right above my head is a cherry burl, which was so much fun to turn. And I just I love what wood turning has to do with relationships as well, and people, because if you look at a forest, you see, an amorphous green blob. You see, see everything. But when you look, start to look closer, you start to see different species, and that's the same way with people. And sometimes you encounter people, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're sitting with them on the train or on a next to them on plane, or maybe you meet them in a class or that kind of thing. But it's the same kind of thing, and you tend to harvest them, that you tend to collect them, and then you start to get to know each other, which is cutting them up, and some of them are going to end up on the fire, the fire pit, and some of them are going to end up being close friends. You never know. But even when you finish a bowl, it doesn't quit moving. So you think about the wooden objects in your home, they don't stop moving, even though they're mostly inert. But if you change humidity, if you go from Florida and all of a sudden you go to Utah, the humidity is like 6% in Utah and about 120% in Florida. The wood moves, it expands, it changes, it cracks, it warps. And God, relationships are just like that, aren't they? You change seasons, and you change locations, and what worked in one location may not work in another location.
My brother is a woodworker. He's an amazing furniture builder, so it's not like any competition. And he's very humble, but I can always tell when his dream has manifested itself. So whatever he saw in that piece of wood or in those pieces of wood, when his dream is realized, it shows on his face.
I've not I don't do a lot of flat work. I do some, but I'm not very good at it. But
But do you
I
go through the
just
same
love,
thing where when you pick up that piece of wood, you imagine what it might be when you're done?
And I keep the scraps, and the scraps become finials, and
Oh, what are
you can
finials?
see.
Take us
So
with you here.
if you see like that one, that's a Christmas ornament that's right
Okay.
there. And so it's got a ball and then a finial that sticks off the bottom of it.
Okay, can I just show off my ignorance here? Some,
Sure.
I think I was on your, no, I was on your Instagram, and I think I
Yep.
thought they were dreidels.
Oh, okay. Well, I can see what it
Maybe.
looks like.
Oh, something just dropped.
Yeah, probably
Oh,
fell
okay.
over.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't quite this. Okay. Oh, that's really pretty. Yeah, I did see something else on your Instagram, I think, that looked a little bit more like a dreidel. But holy moly.
Yeah, that's a piece of magnolia, as a matter of fact, and then the finials are dyed wood. But anyway, yeah,
That's
it's fun to make, fun to build.
great. Well, you're obviously very talented. And yeah, it's just interesting to me when people show creativity, whatever that looks like, because Lord knows there's so many different definitions. But looking at some of the things that run your Instagram and that sort of thing, it's like, oh my goodness, this fellow is very talented.
Yeah.
Okay, did we cover Every Dog Has Its Day enough?
I think we did. I think we did. Is there anything that you have not asked that you would like to ask?
Oh, nobody's ever asked me that before. Should I go back through my notes? No, I think we did all right. Okay. Your website is fairly business oriented.
That's why I'm redoing it.
Okay. So do me a favor. I am going to put schultzandassociates.com on your page in the show notes as soon as you have Chip Schultz. And I'm getting ahead of myself. As soon as you have Chip Schultz, let me know, please, and I'll make sure to replace it.
Perfect.
Now, website links in the show notes, all of your links. So I've talked about Instagram, that sort of thing. All of your links are going to be on your page at our website.
That's very kind of you.
Listeners, if Chip's thoughts on identity, family purpose, or life's next chapters resonated with you, I'd love to hear from you. What role, expectation, or belief have you found yourself letting go of in this season of life? If you know someone who's navigating a transition, retirement, empty nest, career change, caregiving, or simply, that's a funny word, simply wondering what's next, I hope you'll share this conversation with them. If you're enjoying these conversations about reinvention, resilience, and creating your own next chapter after 60, I'd be delighted if you'd follow the Boomer Woman's podcast so you never miss an episode. Chip Scholes, thank you for being my guest today and for reminding us that the biggest changes in life don't happen all at once, usually, anyways. They happen gradually, small decisions, change of perspective, and I guess the courage to become who we're meant to be now as we enter this next chapter. So thank you for that.
Agnes, it was an absolute pleasure being here.
I so appreciate you reaching out on Podpatch. Thank you. Have a great rest of week.